بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اسے اللہ اللہ کیسا پیارا نام ہے، عاشقوں کا مینا اور جام ہے. Just the repetition of the name of the beloved sweetens the mouth. Just the repetition of the name of the beloved. In Deoband, the town of Deoband, there was a Nawab. Nawab refers to a wealthy person, influential, in charge of the affairs of the town. In the old days, then that was a Nawab, like how you have an Induna, Chaudhary, so they used to have a Nawab as well. And they used to have a type of a celebration for the first roza that the child has kept in his life. Small child, 5, 6, 7 years of age, they initiate him into roza, and after him keeping the first roza, then they would have a big feast. And people, according to the person's capacity, invite people, his relatives, friends from far and abroad. Now it is around a third time, and they can see that the child's mouth is drying up, absolutely dry. It's creating a fear, panic in the hearts of his parents. On the one end, they have to go this celebration. And if they have to go the celebration, this child's condition is critical now. What do we do? These formalities, all these things, they really break the spirit of Deen. Deen requires of us to be simple, straightforward, clear. Sahaba Ikram didn't have this type of takalluf and formalities in them. Straightforward, simple people. The more formalities come into the life becomes more and more complicated, more difficult. Simple thing now, I have to follow a lengthy procedure before you do it. But without that formality, it could have been such a simple, easy task. Take for one, marriage and nikah. Minus the formality, such a simple, beautiful, enjoyable thing. But then you add all the frills to it, now it becomes a complicated issue. And then people ask, but what's wrong in that formalities? What's wrong in all the frills and the fancies? Yes, now when you make it an exciting thing, you make it a very, very elaborate thing, then before embarking into nikah, a person gets into a panic. I need that type of money. I need to have that type of wealth to do it. And in the process, then he does wrong. Obviously, people have sentiments, they have feelings, and they can restrain their feelings to a certain point. Beyond that, then what happens? The nikah is prolonged for that whole, or for that type of wealth and all that, the nikah is being delayed. The nikah is being delayed. Now, what does he do with these emotions? What does he do with these feelings? What does she do with her feelings? So Islam looked at realities, it looked at objectives and goals, rather than all the frills and the fancies that are associated with life. Many a times that innocent boy, the innocent girl, they in themselves they are innocent. They don't have the wrong inclination. But then these things are delayed. They are delayed. The hadith says very clearly that there are certain things that you mustn't delay. Nikah, girl, the match is found for, then don't delay. The janaza, when it's ready, now don't delay. What's the need to delay it now? Right? Do it immediately. In fact, this, apart from the virtue, it's so much more easier to do it straight away. There's no headache, no heartache. I imagine a person's body is in the mortuary, and I have to wait 2 days and 3 days, and then go and bury the thing, or the heartache that it causes. Until and unless it's not buried, you don't feel at ease. This mortuary business started off now recently. People made a business out of it. The funeral parlors, people that are selling coffins and all that, make a big business out of it. And before this, it was a simple, straightforward thing. We may think about our own selves or the class that is a little bit more affluent. But what happens to the general public? 70-80% of the public, what happens to them? Now there's a funeral, what they are earning is about average South African salary is 3,000-3,500 average, slightly above average. Now that simple coffin box costs about 3,000 rand. That means his whole salary must spend to this. Where must they get their money? Now then they must contribute towards an insurance fund. If they don't have the fund, illiterate people, what do? Aaye din is kisam ke masail aate hai. It's a daily occurrence. If you only relate with the average or the poorer class, you will know what type of agony it brings to them. Then this is just only the funeral box only, the coffin box. Then they have got a thing in them that they must invite so many people. Slaughter a cow and invite so many people. And then get some blankets. Bali bali cheese. Strange, unique type of things. They must do all these things, then they fit within the circle. If they don't do these things, they don't fit within the circle. Now, contrast this against the Islamic teaching. Islamic teaching, take it straight. It's an easy, simple procedure. For 300-400 rand, 500 rand, you can wrap the whole thing up. The ghusl, the kafan, and even the burial, everything can be done complete. In fact, you don't even need to have that type of money. It's just a government formality that you have to pay for the burial, right? That's a government formality, you can't escape that. But besides that, it's such a simple, easy, straightforward thing. When we complicate these issues, then this is the result. And India is even worse, India. You haven't seen Indian life, but it's even worse. One person came to the Hakim, he was like a doctor. So he says, the doctor, Hakim sahab, ab toh mere abba ko achche kar hi do. He says, Hakim sahab, ab toh mere abba ko achcha kar hi do. Now just fix my father. He's sick now, just make him right now. Somehow just get him right. So the Hakim sahab was a little bit amused by his ways. He says, just get him right now. Why is this person so panicky to get the father right now? So, why are you so worried now? So he says, chawal ka dam to bahut bar gaya hai. The price of rice is gone very, very high now. Exorbitant, it's a drought, so the prices are gone right above. Now if he dies, I have to make kheer. I have to get the works and feed hundreds of my relatives. Where must I afford all this thing here? He's giving a straightforward story. As he will feel, he's explaining it. Where must I get the money from? If I don't do it, the whole family, the whole circle will jump up over my neck. And if I do it, where must I get the money from? So these formalities really, they destroy the very fabric of society. One person, he's trapped into this. But now he knows the agony, the problem that people go through, these formalities, and what agony they go through. So, as the custom has it, so he called all his relatives, etc., everybody. A little bit of an intelligent person, so he called everybody. And he prepared all the food, the dal chawal and ghee, whatever goes with it. So he prepared everything. Hundreds of people, men and women, all seated. So he goes to the mic and he announces. He says, brothers, you know, I've lost my father, and the loss of a father is such a great tragedy, you know that. And it's something that is irreplaceable, etc. He began to talk. And then he says, but you know what? The greater tragedy is that this has landed me into debts. I had to take an account from a banya, I have to take some money on interest to afford this meal and to feed it to you people. Right? Now, to pay the interest on this will take me at least 2 years. I wanted some of my properties to be able to afford this type of lavish meal for you people. Now, it's going to take me over 2 years to pay this bond. Now you can go on eating. I'm going khayega, who's going to eat now? But he's telling you exactly what it takes. See, this is formalities. Whether it's a marriage, whether it is a burial, whether it's a death, whatever it is. But go the straightforward, simple way. Mawlana Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah relates an incident. People begin to make a business of this. You know, some of you have seen some of those mazars in India. And around the mazar, there is a thriving business. I would say no less than 1,000 people are generating an income around that mazar only. Flowers, someone is selling flowers, someone is selling agarbatti, someone is selling some whatever. But it's approximately over 1,000 businesses are just thriving around the mazar only. Formalities again. So they have it in India that after the burial and all that, after the death and mayyat and janaza, everything is over, then they have 40 days, right? And whoever they consider as the person that is going to do the fatiha, then he comes and offers the fatiha, whether it's a munshi sahab or miyaji or whoever it is. So he'll come and do the fatiha. So when he does the fatiha, then he's given a nice pot of food, some gift, and some envelope is given. So now there's hundreds of people whose families are lost, right? So they have to do the fatiha every year, or whatever it is, every second year they have to do some fatiha. So it's at least 20 people in the year, what he must be collecting. So anyway, it so happened that he went out for some errand. One person came up and he had to get the fatiha done. He had to do the fatiha, but the munshi sahib is not around. So he found someone else in the masjid and he says, you know how to do fatiha. He had to get this over his head because the ladies were asking him at home. He got the fatiha done. And it's such a custom that you can't eliminate it. It's difficult to eliminate this type of custom. Showing you formalities and what it causes to people. So he is scared about the woman folk at home. They're going to ask him that you had to do that fatiha. Did you do that fatiha? So he found someone in the masjid. Said, why can't you do that fatiha for me? So, alright. So he's getting a pot of food, plus he's getting an envelope, plus he's getting a gift. So why don't let it come our way? Anyway, he did that fatiha and he collected that good parcel, good envelope. And as he's moving, he realized that the munshi sahab that was the induna of the place, he just pulled in. My business is gone for the day. See now, they're looking at it as a business. They're looking at it as a business. That is why they say, some of the old people in India, they say that you rather, when you get a child, you call it the munshi sahab and give him a gift. See? Rather do that than calling him when there is a death in the family, there's a 40 days in the family. Obvious reasons, when he's looking at it as a business, then he'll like more of use to die. That you can do more fatihas. But if you call him on a birth, then he'll look for more people to be born in your family. Happy occasion. See, the whole thing has been changed. From where it starts and where it ends up, formalities. So Islam is a straightforward, clear, clean religion. There's no dirt, there's no adulteration, no pollution, no corruption in deen. It's absolute clean deen. But then when we start this, one person starts something, and then the second person adds to it, and the third, and the fourth, then all these problems, one after the other, they just pile up. Nikah is a simple thing. Nikah, marriage, all simple, straightforward, clear things. Don't make it a business. Don't make it complicated. Leave it as simple. Taraktukum ala tariqatin bayda, layluha wa naharuha sawa. I have left you on a straight, clear path. Straight, clear path. The day and the night, all are equal, identical. There is nothing ambiguous in Islam. Everything is clear, transparent. Rasulullah passed on very, very intimate life. Everything has been recorded. Absolutely. You look in the books of Hadith, everything. Whether it is his intricate personal life, his public life, everything has been recorded. Everything is clear. There is nothing ambiguous in Islam. So, when there is nothing ambiguous, everything is clear, everything is there is absolute transparency, then go on that path. You will find so much of enjoyment, so much of happiness, so much of clarity. As you're moving, you're progressing, and there you're finding room again. You're progressing, and there's more room. But then when we add all these frills and fancies into the life, then that life becomes difficult. It is difficult to manage. Because it's something that we created with our own hands. It's going to collapse, it's going to fail. That which has been engineered by Allah Ta'ala Himself, then Allah Ta'ala is the creator. What He has designed, He's a creator, then He looks for all emergencies and contingencies. He has seen everything. We can't see beyond. We see to a certain point, then we see, hey, the system is failing. And what's been planned and designed by Him, He has planned it for every contingency, every emergency, every type of situation has been covered. Everything has been covered. A simple situation, look at a girl, right? She earns half what a man will earn as inheritance, right? But she's been taken care of, she's got no expense. Before her marriage, her entire responsibility is the father's. She's got nothing to worry about, no expenses. Her father is responsible squarely for her. That's Islamic law. And after marriage, the husband is squarely responsible. So she's got no expenses before marriage, she's got no responsibilities after marriage. So the Islam said that you'll have half of what a man will have. Really, she didn't require any wealth. But Islam says, no, we'll give you as well. But we'll give you half of what a man will get. So the man doesn't need to ask, now why is she getting half? She's getting half because all her responsibility is not hers. She's got no responsibility. No expenses. Expenses is either for the father's, that is compulsory duty, it's not a favor. It's a compulsory duty. He needs to look after the girl until she's married. And when she's married, then it is the compulsory duty of the husband to take care of her. It's not an optional thing. You'll be answerable. Al mawludi lahu rizquhunna wa kiswatuhunna bil ma'roof. You need to take good care of them. The Quran says good care. Bil ma'roof. In a respectable manner, in a dignified manner. So everybody's rights have been respected and honored. But just apply the simple, basic, natural method of Islam. It's a natural method. It's like as though it was what man was supposed to be doing. It's natural. It's not against your nature. فِطْرَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي فَطَرَ النَّاسَ عَلِيهَا. This is a natural method that Allah Ta'ala has designed for mankind. So we're talking about this Munshi Sahib. As the Munshi Sahib, he's just crisscrossed the person that did the Fatiha. So he sees, now my business is gone. Mera to din ka bepar khatam ho gaya. I lost it today. So he says, if this thing only started off, my whole business will collapse. So I need to just nip it in the bud. So he thought of a plan, came into the masjid, and he caught his baton, and he's striking that baton from one end to the other, one wall to the other end. Making a big noise. The villages are so small and all living very, very close together. So the whole village is echoing with his noise. He is striking from one end to the other, one wall to the other, striking with a mara. Main aapko marunga. I'll kill you. Just be careful. Just get yourself right now. Don't come close to me now. Until the whole village, they all gathered near the masjid. When the whole village gathered near the masjid, now he struck the baton one, two times more, and then he collapsed. Now they tried to get him up again, and they got him up again. So he said, no, boss, now I had enough of this village. I'm just packing up and moving. Bhai, what happened, bhai? Munshi sahab, tell us what happened. No, I'm packing up and leaving this place. I can't stand it anymore. Now, but what happened? Tell us what happened. He says, you see what happened now. I'm an old person in this place here. Right? The ruse of all the deceased, they are very, very familiar with me. See? All the ruse of this area, all the deceased in this Qabristan, they are very familiar with me. So whenever there is a fatiha to be done, food and all that, you know, that's what fatiha means, that food and all that. Whenever there is a fatiha to be done, then I distribute it evenly amongst all the ruhs here. Everybody gets a share. Right? We were laughing at this, but this is reality. This is life in India. You haven't seen life, you haven't lived this, you don't know. Ask someone that lived there, knows of the customs and rituals that go on, he will tell you firsthand what goes on there. So he says, I am quite familiar with them all. So when there is any such a situation, emergency, then I just see that everybody is respected, everybody gets his share. Now there was a fatiha, and that person doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know the rules there. When he doesn't know the rule here, I don't know what thing he did. When he left, all the rules grabbed me. Where's our share? So I start striking the baton from one end to the other end. So I'm chasing them all away. Got you, get away from here, run away from here. See? But now, how much I must defend myself? I defended myself, and how much must I defend? Until they got the bit over me, I collapsed. So I'm going to pull on here for 1-2 more days, I'll be finished. I'd rather pack up and move it from here. So they told him, Munshiji, no, we made a mistake, very, very big mistake we made. There will never be a repetition. You just stay here, we'll ensure that all the fatihas are coming to you. Your business is not affected. It's said in a little bit of a humor, but really this is life. This is life in India. That where these rituals go on, where these customs go on, this is life. But we don't know about it. We don't know about it. We don't know what goes on to the poor person, the person that cannot afford it. We don't appreciate what we are, what we have got and what we enjoy. See? So this path of Rasul-e Pak sallallahu alaihi wasallam is a straight path. See, if nikah is simple, right? Simple, straightforward procedure. Such a simple thing. Not a difficult thing, not a complicated thing. Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu's daughter is widowed. Hazrat Hafsa radiallahu anha, she's widowed. Umar radiallahu anhu approaches Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu that my daughter is widowed. Do you want to take her in marriage? Simple procedure. Now, how we will do it, see, I'm going to do this. I'm talking of our mentality, right? If I am going to offer my daughter in marriage to so and so, then they will think, you know what, I'm hard up to get her married, and she will be considered as a very insignificant, cheap woman, you know. So I'd rather just wait, hold my patience. And in the process, if she has to wait there for another 5 years, 10 years, and the type of difficulties she's going to go through. See? So the Islamic approach is quite simple, straightforward, clear. See? My daughter, she's widowed. Husband is late. Are you interested in marrying my daughter? Then the second thing that has been considered is the class that you belong to. You marry into a class that you belong to. It's not that Islam, na'uzu billah, is racist. You know, it's not a racist thing. It's got nothing to do with race. Marriage is about you are getting families together, you're getting them united. When you're getting them united, then you have to look for ways how they will blend and how they will be together. Not how to break them, rather how they will blend, how the friendship will increase within them. So if you looked at all these aspects, class differences, etc., etc., then you will find that there are more chances for that families to blend together. And if you didn't look at these things, then today you have made the marriage, tomorrow it's disaster, because they're not blending it. The immediate family, the extended family, they can't see each other. Their ways are different. I was just explaining brothers that had come to India when an inspector, or when not inspected, when seen, an abattoir, right? And for any standards, Western standards or Indian standards, it was a very high, modern, and very neat and hygienic. But I will tell you that you can't remain at abattoir. For more than 5 minutes, it's difficult to be the smell, etc. You're not used to it. You're not used to it. Now imagine a person that is working at the abattoir, right? You can imagine now what will be going on. There'll be blood, there'll be meat, there'll be ojri, entrails, all that is getting mixed up. Now as he comes home, even if he washes up, there'll be some smell. There'll be some smell in his body, on his clothing, something. Right? Now the girl that he's married, perhaps, is the daughter of a perfumer. Right? Very sensitive in her temperament. Absolutely clean, pure. And she's never seen anything, any filth, any dirt. Right? Now they are both married. If she has to meet up with this person here, the chances are she'll feel nauseous. She's just dreading the man coming in. Because the relationship in marriage is intimate. And that there's an intimate relationship. And when they're going to get together, she's going to just throw up. She won't be able to manage it. So Islam says, no. You marry within your class, within your circle. She's used to that type of life, then let her marry a person that is from that same class. So the chances for a better, happy, harmonious marriage are greater. The families will be together. There will be more harmony. And there will be more unity in that. But in this, you know, disregard these aspects, then obviously it breaks up. So Islam has considered every aspect of human life, social life, every aspect has been covered. They didn't just look at one thing and disregard everything else. No. Everything has been considered, everything has been respected, everything has been appreciated in Islam. That if there is a marriage and a nikah, then it must be continuous, it must be muhabbat, it must be... So Umar radiallahu anhu, he offers his daughter to Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu. But Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu, na ha kehte hai, na na kehte hai. He doesn't say yes to that proposal. He doesn't reject. He's not rejecting and he's not saying yes. Now, Umar radiallahu anhu went away and he felt, or let me ask Usman Ghani radiallahu anhu about my daughter. And he offered his daughter to Usman Ghani radiallahu anhu. Usman Ghani radiallahu anhu says, no, I don't have a need for marriage presently. So Umar says, I felt a little bit disappointed, but alright, not as disappointed as I felt with Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu. Because Abu Bakr is not saying yes, he's not saying no. This man at least told me no. For the moment I felt a little bit disappointed and I continued. Not long after that, Rasulullah had proposed for Hazrat Hafsa, the daughter of Umar radiallahu anhu. Now, when the nikah was done, everything was settled, so Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu now speaks to Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu. He speaks to him. He said, perhaps that day, when you had offered your daughter to me, right, and I had remained silent, quiet, perhaps you felt a little bit apprehensive, you felt a little bit disappointed. He says, I did feel disappointed, you see. See, when a man feels disappointed for some valid reason, then the right thing is to clear his mind. Then don't leave the man in the lurch. Now, why did he do this? You're leaving the man in the lurch. You're not telling him what happened. But you cleared his mind. So if there was something that was not clear in the mind, his mind has been cleared. But if you leave him in that state, now he says, hey, I don't know what's going on. Why are they treating me like this? Why are they dealing with me in this manner? So he feels more and more doubtful. He feels more and more paranoid. He feels more and more difficult, cumbersome he feels. But why are these people treating me like this? Not this way, not that way. But you lay the cards clearly. Now, that suspense, everything is shifted, is moved away. The minds are clear. There is no malice in the heart. There is absolutely no malice in the heart. See the Islamic way. So you don't keep that malice within the heart. You try and look for ways to eliminate and clean the heart. Don't leave the man in the suspense. So Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu approaches Umar radiallahu anhu himself. Abu Bakr is a senior. And he had all the right to keep quiet. But he can understand that if I'm going to keep quiet, then this is going to create some type of suspense, some type of ambiguity and malice in the heart of Umar radiallahu anhu, that why this man remained totally silent? Why didn't he say yes or no? One of the two. Why did he do this? So Abu Bakr clears the air and he says, you see what? Rasulullah had confided in me and he expressed his desire to marry your daughter. He expressed his desire to marry your daughter. He didn't confirm this, but he expressed his desire to marry your daughter. It was just an intention, he didn't confirm. Right? Now, it could have gone two ways, one of two ways. Either he went on with his intention, or either he cancelled the intention. Because it was just in his mind that I wish to propose. Right? So that wish could have been executed, or it could have been cancelled. One of the two ways it could have gone. For example, if he wished to continue that intention, see, and I proposed for your daughter, then it would have been wrong for me, because Rasulullah had already confided in me that he wishes to propose for your daughter. Now I go and I ignore the wish of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, is going to be wrong of me. And number two, it could be that Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam cancels this intention. He cancels the intention. If he cancels the intention, then I am there to propose. But there is a third situation now. The third situation is, then why didn't you express this to me? I didn't express it to you because this was a secret that Rasulullah had confided in me. I can't share the secret. It was a secret between me and Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. He expressed this desire. I can't share it with you. I can't disclose and divulge his secret to you. Now, Umar radiallahu anhu's mind is absolutely clear. There is nothing in the heart. The mind is absolutely clear. Do you see? So Islam doesn't go for this path of malicious, you know, heart is dirty, filthy. Clean heart, absolutely clean heart. One Sahabi is going for a proposal. We're looking for the clarity of the heart. You see, what was read today was the sweetness of zikr. You know, when you're making zikr and you get a sweetness. And all these things are dependent, they are subject to the clarity and the cleanliness of the heart. The cleaner the heart, the eyes are clean, the ears are clean, the tongue is clean, then you will find that the name of Allah is going clean into the heart. And you will find the sweetness. And the sweetness sometimes comes onto the tongue. I know some of my friends, they tell me we make zikr, and it is someone that's poured some honey in our mouths. We can actually see that, we can feel the sweetness. It's not just an imaginary thing. It's not just a figurative sweetness. No, it's a real sweetness. Like someone has placed a toffee on the mouth, and how you feel sweet, we feel sweet like that. Okay. But that happens when the heart is absolutely clean and clear. So we need to work towards a clean society. We talk about anti-pollution, but that is one part of the cleanliness. Islam speaks about both cleanliness, internal and external, not just half. Islam is not a half job. Otherwise, we're only talking of external cleanliness and you forget and disregard the inner cleanliness. That is an incomplete job. So it's a non-Arab Sahabi, and he says to an Arab Sahabi that I wish to propose to a certain girl. But I'm not an Arab, so I'm not familiar with the crowd. So can you take the proposal for me? Sure, why not? Why can't I be a help and an assistance for my brother? He goes into the house, there's a slight delay, and he comes very embarrassed, very ashamed of himself. But what happened? I'm too embarrassed about myself. Now what's happened? Tell me exactly what's happened. So no, I went there with your proposal, but the people of the home say that we're not interested in this man because he's not an Arab. Now I told the class, the language is different, so the ways will be different. You're getting married, for example, to a white now. Just for example. Now, she can only make all boiled foods. No chilies, no spice, no marcha, masala, nothing. How are you going to stick? How are you going to stand? You're not going to last there. First day, second day, 1-2 weeks, you make sabar. After that, I want my samosa, I want my bhajia, I want this type of chili bites, I want all these things here. And she can't make it. So obviously, there's going to be problems in the home. So they understood that perhaps they won't be able to gel. So they explained to the Sahabi that he's taking the proposal that we're not happy with this man because of the same reason that I explained. But we're happy with you if you're interested.
No, there was a need for nikah. He had a need for nikah. No, it's wrong of him to say, no, I don't have a need. That's just a formality. It's just a cover-up. Islam says, don't pretend. You went and met your friend. You are hungry. And he says, you ate. If you didn't eat, you tell him that you didn't eat. Now, why make up a story that and tell him that, no, I ate already? If you haven't eaten, you tell him. Make it clear that I haven't eaten. Don't make up a story. So these people express their desire that we don't mind taking you as our brother-in-law or son-in-law. It's alright. Nikah is concluded straight away. Now it's not a lengthy procedure. Now proposal, then engagement, then come and give all the gifts, then bridal shower, then mehndi party, and eventually nikah after 10 years. After the whole in Timbuktu is booked. No, it's a straight, simple, straightforward procedure. May the nikah finish, come out embarrassed. So this sahabi, that is a non-Arab sahabi, he says, no, really, I need to ask you for a maaf. Not the other way around. So why? He said, this girl was decreed for you. It was in your taqdeer. When it was in your taqdeer, then why did I have to send a proposal for her? She was meant for you. And the evidence for it is that your proposal is been confirmed. Your nikah is done with her. Then why did I have to send a proposal? Now for us, I'm just looking at it in retrospect, if this type of a situation had come up, for years, hey, he snookered me, this chap. This person snookered me. It was my chance. And see how he played very, very dirty. What intention he had in his mind. And that was a clean heart. Very clean, absolutely clean society. So now it was your taqdeer. It was meant for you. It was not my place to go and send that proposal for this girl. Allah Ta'ala grant us that cleanliness of the heart. You know, we want to come closer to Allah Ta'ala. We want to come closer to Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. We want to come closer to Jannah, don't we? All of us, we are looking forward to that. We aspire more to come closer to Allah Ta'ala, to Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, to our final end, when we're going out from this world, we're going with a clear, clean relationship with Allah Ta'ala. Records are clean. Grave, the farishtas in the grave also, we haven't got anything to interrogate us with. We've got a clean record. So then we need to learn to how to be clean, both inner cleanliness and outer cleanliness. Allah Ta'ala Tawfiq.